We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, it's Monday night with the red and white, getting you going here from McAllister's Deli on McGalliard. Head coach James Whitford from the Ball State men's basketball team joining us. Two of his players will be here as well in the back half of the program. We'll talk with center Blake Huggins. We'll talk with point guard Teemu Suokas as well. So we'll get a little bit of a different flavor. We'll go from Tennessee to Finland, and we'll start with the head coach. James, good to see you.
Good to see you, although I'll start by correcting you. It's Teemu.
What did I say?
Teemu.
I got to get the A in there?
Yeah. There's no A, but it's pronounced Teemu.
Now, where does the Teme come from?
It's easier for everyone to say than Teemu. So he said Teme works for him, too, and that's what we all call him, including me, too. But I've worked hard at it, and I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it properly. Teemu.
Can we go with Teme?
Yes, okay. We can.
Teemu Suokas will be with us on the back half of the program as well. A lot to get to with the Cardinals here. Home tomorrow night against Buffalo. It's a 6 o'clock tip. I always say that as if anybody listening can go to the game, but it is a 6 o'clock tip tomorrow inside Worthen Arena. Our coverage over on Work and Blake FM will begin at 5:40. You can catch that game on ESPN digital platforms as well. Whit, you guys come off just one game this past week. You guys were in Akron on Saturday. COVID wiped out a game for you guys midweek, so let's start there. How are you guys right now from a health and numbers standpoint?
Yeah, knock on wood, we're doing good. You know, We've had three cases this year, and in each one of the cases, we haven't had any spread within our group. It's someone who caught it outside, and so it's a good sign in the sense that we're doing the right things to minimize the spread within our group. The thing that's getting hard for us is not the COVID, because three would be on the very low end of college basketball teams. It's just the impact of the quarantines, and the good news is we've done a good job of staying healthy. The bad news is we have a very large list that's still capable of getting quarantined. And so when we have a case, it impacts us pretty profoundly.
There's almost a weird catch-22 to this season that I never thought about, because why would you give – like, nobody's trying to get sick, but, like, the teams that have gotten sick are almost in an odd positive position right now, other than the fact that they've evaded, like, potential terrible consequences and death. But – if you had the virus and you're within the window where scientifically you're supposed to not be able to get it anymore, you feel really good about your position in going into the conference tournaments. If you're you guys who have handled it very well and very few members of your team have gotten it, you have to be on this ultra high alert as the season comes to a close, and it's almost unnerving.
It is. I mean, you hit it really exactly right. I mean, there's, you know, if you have someone who's got the antibodies, they can't be contact traced, they can't be quarantined. It frees you up to practice in a little bit of a freer way. I mean, there's some teams in our league that have had literally every guy in the roster had it.
Yeah.
They go on a trip and all 15 catch it at the same time. And then it's not a good thing, obviously, but if you get through it, it obviously provides advantages, and it just kind of is what it is. It's trying to manage a college basketball season during a pandemic.
Of your day, like, how much time is thought on COVID-related issues, even tangentially?
A lot. You know, one of the things that's really complex for me is, now I don't want to say complex, it's just it takes an incredible amount of energy from me, is to constantly be the one that's reminding and trying to create us a culture of safety within our program. And at this stage of the game, people look at it all different ways. Some people worry about it, and some guys on my team don't worry about it at all. It's their kind of core beliefs in it. And some other people think it's, you know, more serious, or at least think the risk of spreading it to someone else is the part that you really have to be careful of. But like a lot of teams, we have a wide variety of opinions within our staff and within our players. But it's helping them recognize, no matter where you lie on that spectrum, we can't be successful as an organization if we're constantly having spread within our group, or we're constantly getting shut down and we're constantly getting quarantined. So locking in on that common thread for us, that we all want to play well in the conference tournament, we all want to have our whole team together, and that requires a certain amount of discipline and sacrifice from all of us, players, staff, et cetera, and just constantly reinforcing that message and trying to get the buy-in. And we've done a great job with it, you know. But it's the next 4 or 5 weeks will make or break us. We cannot afford another episode. You know, we have to be able to stay whole for the final month of the season.
James Whitford joining us here, Ball State men's basketball coach. David Eha did the math, and I don't remember the back half of it. You might know, but the quarantine, as you alluded to, is the more difficult part of all of this from a basketball standpoint for some guys. Myron Thomas, 33 days in quarantine out of like 40 something.
Yeah.
He hasn't had the virus. He's right in quarantine because of contact tracing for a month out of like the last 6 weeks. What's life for a guy like Montana like right now?
he's eager to go, to say the least. He wanted to know who he could call to fight the last quarantine. He wanted to get him on the phone and said, unfortunately, there's no one. He's frustrated, but grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can. And you know, what he's got to do is do body weight workouts when he's at home, and he's got to catch up on his academics when he's at home, and use that time to the very best of his ability. And then and we'll get him back here at midnight tonight. He gets out of quarantine, so he'll come in tomorrow and do a bunch of 5-on-0 before shoot around, and then he'll have shoot around, and he'll be able to play in the game tomorrow night, although obviously has missed a lot of time.
What's it like for him from just keeping in shape, acclimated, all that? Like, what does he miss, and how do you keep him in the loop when he's away?
Well, we find ways to get him cardio and get him some stuff to try to keep him up to shape, and that's been one of the things that has been a shift for us. It's really important, because what you're finding is Myron's also been hurt quite a bit this year, and that's when the two go hand in hand. You know, the more time you miss, the more likely you are to get hurt, because you lose your conditioning, you lose your stop-start, change of directions that you're doing every day. So he's had both a lot of quarantine and a very high injury rate for the year. So it's been a tough year for him. And when he's played very well. He's one of the best 3-point shooters in the conference. He's our leading rebounder. But it's not just him. It's a lot of people around the country. You know, it's been a complicated year for many, and he's one of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, what kind of conversations have you had with your friends? And I say that specifically in mind the fact that Jim Christian is probably trying to find the nearest bridge right now with 4 scholarship players available for tomorrow's game for Boston College. What is it like in the coaching community, the conversations that you guys have?
It's a lot about the COVID stuff, and it's such an unusual year. It's the normal you know, what's a competitive advantage and what's not a competitive advantage. And there's a lot of talk about the advantages of teams that have just let COVID run through, not have had COVID run through their group. And you see them all around the country. Houston caught it very early and got through it. And Loyola.
Buffalo.
Caught it all at once. Buffalo caught it all at once. And it is what it is, you know. And I think for us, you know, you have to do it both. Here come two of my masked players into the McAllisters right now. Yeah, you have to do it in a way that is both protecting your community and is living by your own value system as a coach as to what you think is the right way to do it. What's the right way to – what values do you want to teach your guys about what really matters? And you just live with the consequences where they are, you know, because winning is winning at the expense of doing it, the things the way you believe you should do them rings hollow to me.
James Whitford joining us. Ball State men's basketball is in action tomorrow with the Buffalo Bulls. Where is the line as well? Because I feel like it shifts depending on which programs you're talking about. And I just said, like, Jim Christian's got four scholarship guys for a game tomorrow. You guys played without four people that were significant contributors against Akron on Saturday. It was a tough sled for you guys the last time you faced Buffalo. And then you get, and I don't know what the number situation in Ypsilanti is, but Eastern's going to shut down its next three games. It will not play again until it faces you guys in Michigan next Saturday. How do you guys address the idea of, hey, we have enough, we don't have enough? What is a competitive Division I game?
You know, it's funny because in theory, you're supposed to, if you have eight scholarship players, you're supposed to play, period. And then there's some, it's really up to the institution and the state rules, because there's some schools that if they have one person catch it, they won't let their team play. And then there's other universities that will let you play as long as you've contact traced. But it's different for every school. So what we've been playing with low numbers, and there's a lot of schools in our league, I don't know how many, if it's half or somewhere around there, where they won't let their team play at all. And it's a double-edged sword because, you know, if you're not playing at all when you're down, well, you're less likely to lose the games. You know, you're not playing these games where you feel like you're kind of have one arm tied behind your back. But over the long haul, I don't think that's in your best interest for March. I do think it's in your best interest for how many games you win and how many games you lose now. But especially in our case, it's not like we're playing for an at-large. You know, we're playing to be our very best in March. So I'm thankful to have the opportunity to compete. And as hard as the Akron game was, we learned a lot from it as a team. I learned a lot from it as a coach. And it was a good learning experience, despite it being a very painful game. And I'm confident we learned the lessons. I thought we watched the film the right way. I thought our guys responded the right way. I thought we had two good practices and really important practices. And you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow. But we're going to play a lot better tomorrow than we did on Saturday. That much I'm confident in.
We'll dive into tomorrow's matchup here in just a second. But one more general question on COVID. John Gross for Akron coached in a T-shirt on Saturday. Bless his heart, Michael Regai and Jackie Winden are two of the better television commentators in the league. They weren't on camera Saturday. There's nobody in the arena except for like essential staff. They called the game in tracksuits and hoodies. There's just something very different about all. Like, how much of that do you notice?
You know, you should talk to these two guys about it because I don't really notice it. Like, I've never been that guy. Sometimes I get done with a game at home and I'm asking the staff, how was the crowd tonight? And I've kind of in my own world when I'm out there. But I think for most people, I'm often told I'm one of the least observant people on the planet. I actually had a game this year where I didn't wear the right thing, or staff is supposed to wear the same stuff. And my girlfriend said to me when I got home, you know, do you know you wore something different than the rest of the staff? And I said, no, I didn't. I didn't notice. So I don't notice those things as well. These guys, they notice them a lot more than I do, I'm sure.
There's nothing weird? Like, you, as far as...
It's different, but I'm used to it by now. Okay. You know, for me. And for these guys, I'll be interested in their perspective on it. But it's different. It reminds you of the non-conference scrimmages that you have.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Which I really enjoy, the fact that we can play those, but you play in these empty gyms. So it's not that different, you know.
I'm not asking for your feeling on this. I'm asking for your prediction. Will you ever wear a shirt and tie and jacket again as a basketball coach, or has that gone by the wayside?
I hope it's gone by the wayside. I'll say that. I would put it as unlikely.
That's a shame.
That's not a shame. That's a good thing.
The funny thing about it, though, is that everybody said, like, when COVID goes away, will people go back to suits and ties? And
I was why do coaches wear suits and ties? I mean, I guess you could say that I'm just doing it to fit in because that's what everybody does. But I've never understood why we wear suits and ties. We're basketball coaches.
Well, but, like, why did they stop? Why did you stop wearing them? Like, what about now was the reason? Like, I'm all for it. But, like, now, like, what was the trigger that was like, you know, let's go to polos?
I have no idea. But, I mean, it doesn't seem to me like it's not like I'm sitting behind the desk and bringing people in to have meetings with them. You know, I'm running around, I'm sweating. You know, my players are in uniforms.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it just makes sense. Dick Bennett did it a long time ago. I just got to have the courage Dick Bennett had to pull the plug.
You're not for the uniforms as coaches, though.
No, and not like baseball, you mean?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to wear a basketball uniform. That's partially for me. It's mostly for the fans. I think it would. I would be helping them as much as I would be helping myself.
We'll talk on the court with James Whitford. Buffalo coming up tomorrow. A little bit about Akron Saturday. And then Blake Huggins and Tame Swokas are here as well. It's Ball State men's basketball from McAllister's Deli. It's Monday night with the red and white. Students get 10% off and a free cookie as well when they show their student ID here at McAllister's Deli on McGalliar. This is the Gainbridge Radio Network from Learfield IMG College. Back here at McAllister's Deli on McGalliar. Again, students always get 10% off and a free cookie at McAllister's Deli when they show their student ID here in Muncie. It's Monday night with the red and white talking Ball State men's basketball. The Cardinals are home for the first time in 16 days coming up tomorrow night. They'll take on the Buffalo Bulls at 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:40 on our Gainbridge Radio Network. Work FM and Blake FM. Witt, it's been 16 days since you guys have been home, but I feel like that hasn't, like, we talked about what's the impact. Like, statistically speaking, that's like oddly not mattered across the league this year.
You know, it's funny. I've been wondering. I've been meaning to email Ken Pomeroy and ask him. I'd be curious to see the impact of home away this year nationally, and is there how big is the change? Because it would make sense that there is some, for sure.
The MAC is 59% home. I'm probably not telling you anything you don't know. The MAC's 59% home winning percentage last year was 65.
So it's still statistically significant. And you win 60% of your games, you're a top four seed.
Yeah. That's 11th in the country as far as conferences rank. So you're top third at winning 59% of your home games.
Right. So you're saying the national average is 57, somewhere around there is what you're kind of saying.
Yeah. Yeah, about that.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I don't know what it normally is.
Probably 60 without looking. This is very, very specific mathematics.
There's some people out there who would really know. You know where the biggest home court advantages are if you go college basketball across the country?
Where's that?
They're all altitude.
Yeah, that
makes
sense.
And now the best home winning percentages are Duke, Carolina, Kansas, et cetera. Well, they got the best teams.
And then Mountain West.
But the disparity between, like, a real measure of home court advantage is, hey, you know, I win 30% of my games in a row, but I win 90% at home. I'm not a great team, but I win everything at home. And
sure,
if you look at the biggest disparity, New Mexico, Air Force, it's all the teams. Colorado, it's going to be all the teams that play at altitude. Utah, I think it's 9 of the top 10 home court advantages are teams that play at altitude.
Well, that you guys are not at altitude, but that being, well, you have done that whole sect of the country before.
I have.
That being said, though, you guys have played the fewest home games in the MAC right now.
Yeah, played two in the conference, non-conference.
Do you feel good about having kind of backloaded home schedule right
now? Yeah, I'm looking forward to that for sure, because it's not just the games that when you play 7 out of 9 in a row, it's the travel and it's the, you know, you name it. It just kind of has a little bit of a wear and tear effect, and it'll be nice on everybody to just have a more regular schedule and be at home for sure. I'm looking forward to that, and you know, mostly we're just looking forward to getting whole and not only have the players, but have a chance to get a rhythm and get a consistency and get comfortable in our roles and be able to play the way that we want to play. It's been this elusive target for us all year and really eager to have that chance to feel whole.
Evaluate that for me based on, obviously, you're down guys on Saturday. But how did you play versus the way you want to play against the Zips?
No, that's the greatest challenge. And honestly, it was a great learning experience for me. I talked to the guys about it, you know, that we had 2 days to prepare. We had Thursday and Friday. And, you know, we have Tamu, who's going to be on here in a minute, who's played the point guard for the first 4 months. And we just started teaching him a little bit of the two. And you have Jaron, who's just coming back and learning the one. Ish, who spent most of the year playing the point guard. Kanai, who spent most of the year as a backup small forward. And then in 2 days, you have, you know, Tamu's playing really some small forward. I mean, he's playing out there with Luke Bumbalo and Jaron Coleman at the same time. And you have Ish playing all off the ball. You have you have so many variety of different lineups. Kanai playing all of his minutes as a power forward. Bracken playing some as a backup power forward, which is unusual for him. Bracken starting at the center, but not able to practice as a center all week because we don't have enough bodies in doing it. So he spends the whole time practicing at power forward, and in the game he's playing center to start. And what I didn't do a good job of is, you know, we had all those changes, which we knew were complex. And you have to scout and prepare for Akron, who's got a very, very good point guard, Lauren Christian Jackson, who creates a lot of problems. And you know, on Thursday and Friday, we tried to address all the things that we thought were relevant for the game, both trying to get ourselves organized and trying to address Akron and the problems that they have. And when I watched the game, I mean, we looked so overwhelmed mentally with all the things that were coming up. And if I could do it over again, and it's what we've done the last 2 days, I would have said, listen, don't worry one bit about Akron. We just need to spend Thursday and Friday solely worried about us and trying to get organized ourselves and make sure that we're comfortable in different roles, different guys, different cuts, different, you know, Tame's coming up on the left side when he sees the handoff. Is he catching the ball here? Is he catching the ball there? Who's he looking for on the cut? We were so off on all of that stuff that I should have never addressed Akron. I should have just spent the 2 days trying to get us organized. And that's really what we've spent very little time on Buffalo. We did a little bit of it, kind of get a sense of what the game is going to feel like. But we spent all of yesterday and today watching them learning, me learning, and just trying to get comfortable playing with the different lineups that are going to be on the floor so that people know where each other are going to be and how we're going to play together. Yep. That's what I think what a lot of people don't understand about the changes. It's not just the KJ's points in defense and Myron's points in defense. That's truth be told, it's a relatively small part of it. It's an important part. The much greater impact is on the other end. And in our case, what's been very complex is we already had this big shoe to drop with bringing Boogie back. And Ish moving off the ball and all the things that impacted. And we're kind of mowing our way through that, which was a difficult challenge. And then this was a complex wrench that was thrown in the middle of it. But I didn't do a very good job of organizing it. I just didn't fully see until I watched the game how hard it was going to be for us to have all those guys in different roles. And I learned a real valuable lesson. I think our guys learned a real valuable lesson. And confident we will look much better on Tuesday than we did on Saturday.
Feel free to talk as technical as you want and or can here to me on this one. But for someone at home who's just saying, like, well, why does it matter? You got five guys. Like for Bracken, all right, he's playing the four versus the five, the power forward versus the center. Why can't he just go play? What are the technical differences, particularly like lately where you guys have had a four-guard lineup? The technical differences that guys have to know and understand, and the differences not just from a chemistry standpoint of how they play together, but how plays work and how your system works when you have guys that don't necessarily fit the defined roles you have going into it.
I would say the simple answer, and I'll give you a couple technical examples. The simple answer is the five have to play as one. It's not the five best players that win the game. It's the five players that play the best that win the game. And it's the five playing as one on offense. And the same thing on defense, where you're really organized, you're together, you're connected, you're communicating, you understand what you're expecting from each other. So when a guy cuts right, you know, it's a big difference. It'd be like in football, you know, just saying, hey, everybody go out for a pass versus actually having a play, you know, where you're spacing the wide receivers out so they don't go in the same area, and one stretches the safety out, one cuts underneath the linebackers, you know, and you create gaps. If you're just throwing people out there, it's essentially, and you can't run plays, you're saying, hey, everybody just go out for a pass.
Which is basically flag football in the park where it works,
yeah,
when you get
flag
lucky.
Flag football in the park. And when you're playing a really good defense, that's not going to work. So
right.
that's the kind of broad strokes. The very specific examples would be, you know, if I go defensively, you know, if Myron Thomas is in the game, he's going to hard hedge pick and rolls, and he's going to put two on the ball, and that's going to require what we call as a tagger. That's going to require someone to take the roller while that happens. Kanaya Cree is going to switch the pick and roll, and that requires something very different. And you have one example of like 40 that happen in the course of a game. And when you first learn them, it's slow to process in your head, these technical things. And then over the course of time and repetition and practice for a player, they become very automatic. It would be like your very first time driving in Manhattan, New York City, you're going to think about a million things.
Yeah.
And a taxi driver in New York City is going to drive through there fine. He's done it a million times. Well, the same thing happens to an athlete. You become the taxi driver in New York City. And then because you've gotten used to all these things. And then, you know, in our case, we all of a sudden said, hey, you're no longer there. You're in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And everyone's driving on the other side of the road. And the cars are coming in a different way. And it's just really hard on your decision-making process. And it takes time and repetition to get comfortable with the subtle changes. And we've had really valuable days yesterday and today. And we're going to be a lot more comfortable on Tuesday than we were on Saturday. And you know, we'll see how the game goes. And we're still obviously going to have our challenges and a really good team, but we're going to play a lot better. I'm confident in that 100%.
Whit, looking forward to it. And we will talk to you tomorrow night.
Got it. Thanks, Joel.
Head coach James Whitford joining us here Monday night with the Red and White. Blake Huggins, Tame Swokas. We'll talk to the players next. This is Monday Night with the Red and White from Learfield IMG College.